Hey everybody, and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week we get talking to some wonderful innovators, pioneers and collaborators, and again we are, as you already probably know, joined by the wonderful Paul Jewell. Paul, nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. And we every week get joined by one of the team, EV Cafe team, and we have got the lovely Sarah Sloman, or Sass, as we like to call her. Hey, Sass.
Hi, me and John Curtis, despite the 400 and something miles between where we both live, arm wrestle it out to see who gets to come on as your co-host on these episodes. I won this one.
Indeed, you must have had some special weights in the back there, yeah. And for those of you eagle-eyed amongst you, you can see that I've been fighting with a rock up a hill and have somewhat of a black eye. But we won't worry about that. We'll just get straight in and find out a little bit more about Paul. Paul, listen, it's great to have you. Sarah's introduced you to us, and we get to find out a little bit about what you do and the problem that you're trying to solve. So just tell us a little bit about CarCloud and a little bit about you know where you're at with all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the problem we're trying to solve is to make mobility far simpler and more rewarding.
Wow. Across, okay. That was succinct. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. We like this. We like this. I mean, please do elaborate just a tiny bit more. That'd be great.
Okay. So it's, for most people, automotive experience is broken. And whether you're just a daily car user or you're a small, medium-sized company that has a fleet of these assets and huge financial liabilities split across sectors, use cases, et cetera, there is most companies and most homeowners don't have an automotive expert. Everyone's usually got an automotive member of the family that gets harassed at the barbecue about what vehicle to buy next or why. And most SMEs have somebody that used to be a mechanic 20 years ago that now looks after a £4 million fleet. So it's a pretty scary, environment out there. It's becoming more complex. It's becoming more expensive. Most people are getting blindsided to do with all of those items that sit within the life cycle of the need of transportation. And we will be making that not only simpler, not only automated, but also more financially rewarding.
Because the CarCloud platform is very much about connecting the dots behind the scenes in the industry to kind of streamline that experience of, oh my God, proactive maintenance. Oh no, something's gone wrong. My lease is up. I didn't know it was coming up. Oh my goodness me. Worst case scenario, I'm out of MOT. I'm out of insurance windows. And people don't talk about this. We talk about the vehicle. We talk about the budget. We talk about, in our world, the electric vehicles, grid constraints and what charger do I buy? But it's really unusual to be sat in a room of people talking about maintenance schedules, and that really is what keeps things going. How is your solution going to streamline this?
So I think maintenance schedules, the other problem with automotive is it has these tremendous labels for everything that are deliberately put there for people not to understand. The brutal reality is a car usually costs something every month. And if you just break that down across what the next year looks like and bring those items to the forefront in a solution-based environment, not that just having a proactive diary that says, oh, by the way, there's some bad news coming up in 6 months' time. Instead of having that, it's just that what's the solution about the bad news that has a high probability that's coming up in 6 months' time? It's most probably going to be this. So, and I think there's a huge item, especially around what we're doing in SaaS, which is more about removing anxiety through problem solving than it is actually the problem itself. People can feel really empowered and and have a good feeling about what they do daily if they feel like they have some worth, some value. And that's about connectivity between people and vehicles, and it's like I say, for years, the industry has been sliced and diced everywhere, the dealership industry, the franchise industry. And the only person playing musical chairs when the music stops is the consumer, every time. So it's more about turning that around and not really changing the automotive industry, because we won't be able to do that, but definitely changing the way that people can approach it and people can use it is not something that I believe has been conquered properly yet in the UK. And that is our key area of focus.
And you talked about SaaS. He doesn't mean me, viewers and listeners. He means no. SaaS as in software as a service. Paul, you had a question for Sorry. Other Paul.
I did. So one of the things that sort of vexes me as I look out at the market at the minute is this dependence on large fleet. So if we take the van world particularly, I mean, you could argue that the same for cars, but I think vans is more relevant in that we are trying to squeeze 100% of van sales through 50% of the market. And what I mean by that is in the electric world. So we're just trying to go, right, Openreach, take these, and Royal Mail, take these, and all of this kind of stuff. And we're not focusing on the SME sector, the small to medium enterprise, which you have already mentioned is a key area and goal of yours. Why did you focus on it? And what do you think is the benefit for smaller businesses to work with you and this the car cloud kind of solution?
Those are great questions, Paul. And I think there's three key answers for that. There's the commerciality of following the money. Penetrating large fleets usually means you hit political systems within corporate entities. And especially in automotive, you have a lot of perceived self-acclaimed experts through management teams and management structures in large corporates. In my experience, the brutal reality is most of them are not equipped from an education or an experience perspective to actually understand the multiple effects of fleet change. Most fleet managers, directors, junior accountants, office managers, Beryl, the CEO's auntie who works in the corner at reception and rings up Mercedes-Benz every 2 years to get £7 million fleet order, they just don't have the totality of understanding to get the repercussions that are now about to happen once that decision has been made. So the large corporates they're an interesting bunch, to say the least. The reason why my focus is on SME, because I think that's where majority of the growth should come from. That's where the market should be sitting. The people that are on this call, the people that have friends, relatives, that actually really rely on making the right decisions and not being blindsided by whatever is in front of them that causes that. So to answer your question fully, following the money is really important. We feel that we can have more impact on an SME than we can do a corporate. My experience with corporate entities, just generally anyway, is extremely hard work for very little approval or praise, as it were. And also the largest market are the people on this call, right? So we all work for a living. We all use transport in one or many entities. And that's the biggest market to go after, the largest market with the largest need.
Yeah, and what's really exciting to me is that Beryl's got a new job. I'm glad that
Sorry, do you have a Beryl?
Somebody's auntie.
We binned her off. We binned her off. So we'd binned her enough, off, okay. But I'm glad.
Poor Beryl.
I think you're absolutely.
Poor Beryl.
Yeah, I know, right? Passed around from pillar to post. But I think you're absolutely right. I think for more than one reason, we need to focus on that SME sector. We do need to work on your naming of your business. It needs to be Car and Van Cloud. But anyway,
absolutely. I agree.
But we can help with that. We've got people that, you know, Beryl's sister, I think, does something on marketing and stuff. Anyway, but Paul, What really triggered this for you? What was the... Because, I mean, this is... You talk about a problem. How have you seen that problem come to life in front of you?
So I started my career selling cars. So I was a used car salesman. And that was all about solving problems. So I didn't ever really feel that you were ever selling a car. You were just solving a problem from what they were already in to what they were already expected. And then all the items that sat around that. So I think having a broad mind in terms of how you communicate, you know, your desired end goal with other people is absolutely critical. And as you could tell, you know, I don't have, I've got a terrible, you know, slap bang in the middle Birmingham accent. So it's pretty challenging you've got to be very, really good at communicating to try and do well when you've got an accent like mine. It's like a Peaky Blinder on steroids. So we've got to, so we all really started in what is the best way to sell a car? And honestly, that's where it came from. And looking people in the eye, speaking to families, we were doing mainly all credit and finance at the moment. Most of it was high risk. So we were in the subprime sort of credit boom era, as it were. And you learn an awful lot. When you cut your teeth in a real cutthroat industry, unregulated, you know, in many, many ways, it opens your eyes to, you know, exactly the difference between positioning a family to have their next purchase that it does do selling a Ford or a Volkswagen, you know, where everything's already set out for you. The brand's done 90% of the sweat work. They're just in to speak to you about colours. Yeah, people were talking to me about life, you know, from a very early age, and the ability to listen and transfer that over was, I believe, is critical. And that's what made me go into this, Paul, was because all companies are just run by people, right? And if we can help people, and in a market that's probably now, I think we're, automotive is probably the second largest financial market outside of home ownership, I should have thought. It's just been left stagnant, but it's still operating like it was in the 90s and 2000. Very little's changed. The way we access it has only been driven by the development of the mobile phone and the web. But traditionally, everything kind of still remains the same traditional selling, same commission structure, same verticals, all loss leaders for the end person. So I think there's a huge opportunity to add glue and confidence to the end user and the automotive industry itself.
Add glue instead of add blue as we move away from diesel and petrol sales.
Yeah.
I do find what you're doing hugely moral as a product. Not only is the driver app still free, it helps people to understand what's going on, but it's more than that. Transport is such an emotive subject. It's people's livelihood. It's people from A to B. It's connecting people from place to person, to loved ones, to work, to finance, to health, to wealth. Without it, you're right, it's almost certainly one of the biggest industries of our time. And when we started chatting, we were actually talking about Visa. So it became a sort of bizarre sort of financial services sector thing. But very quickly, Paul Kirby, you'll be pleased to hear, both Paul Jewell and I just quickly realised on that people point, we're both super focused on taking everything you've learned in your life and turning that into something proactive, productive for an industry. And we're very lucky that it happens to be this industry that you've fallen in love with. But it's not just car cloud, is it? You've had fingers in many pies over the years. And my attention was spiked by e-scooter. I hope that you're able to go into that. Are you willing to tell us the excitement you're doing for last mile and food delivery and all that cool stuff? Zero emission, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And part of that glue, that's exactly what you refer to there, Sarah, is what happens when you need transport, but you don't need a car. And, you know, because I've already come from that automotive, you know, scoping out background, the last mile of anything, people automatically attach it to delivery. If you just call it LMT, last mile transport, it's probably more efficient in terms of where we're going. So I joined the e-scooter team 9 months ago to have a look at how we can expand that business from traditional last mile delivery to B2B to C. So we now support domiciliary care, NHS trusts. So previously we were known for three major things. We either deliver food to your house. So most deliverable just eat riders you'll see in London will be on our bikes. They'll nearly always be ours. Or we help elderly people in society by getting care workers to be more efficient outside of their cars. So for example, you know, increasing home visits from 5 to 7 to 9 is actually huge when you put that across 100 domiciliary care workers in a way that's hugely tax efficient, zero emissions. They're not struggling with car parking. And also they get the benefit of using one of our electric mopeds at home. Right, so there's no benefit in kind. There's no nothing. It's a really nice feeling when you go and see things like that happening. And as you pointed out, the knock-on effect is what ends up being positive are doing good things better, quicker, and ramping that volume up. And that's what we've been really focused on with last mile transport around a scooter.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europe Car, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europe Car's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
You just got back from China, where you kindly shared a photo. But there's hundreds of these things. What's the plan?
The plan is, we are very shortly going to be releasing a sidecar for our SX250 range. And that we're hoping for phase one of that is going to be for last mile grocery delivery. And that gives a whole new fresh employment sector some significant uplift in terms of how they get paid. So a lot of what we've built around the scooter now in terms of the products and the financial services and the insurance that's soon to come around last mile transport is giving the users of mobility the higher revenues. So you know, most riders would deliver, you know, a takeaway or something on a backpack of sorts. The sidecar means you can put, you know, I think we've got the load up to about 40 kilos of groceries also. So within that square mile of your local Tesco or any other store, you know, you can probably service 5 or 6 deliveries by using exactly the same energy, same zero footprint, same everything. And our batteries only cost 14 pence per every 50 miles of charge. So the efficiency to scale for any type of last mile transport, regardless of what market you're in, is we're really focused on just making what's already there better.
So, I mean, when we think of an e-scooter, so I've got a couple of e-scooters, and these are things that, you know, you wouldn't want to be too much weight on. So just paint us a picture of what we'll perhaps for the edit, we'll get a picture of one to put in so that we can kind of see what we're talking about here. But I don't think it's quite the sort of one that you would give your kids to run around and probably break the law on, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And the brand, the word a scooter, even though it's so very well established, you can't help but think scooter. So it's terrible in terms of the product. There's such a disconnect between the two. It's terrible. I've got to say it, right? It is. You automatically think a high-powered scooter, but it's not. It's a very, very smart piece of tech. Hopefully it flashes up very soon when this goes live. It comes up now. It's basically a motorcycle-grade engineered battery-powered motorbike without the engine that's got a push bike regulatory qualification. So it's all motorbike component parts, suspension, hydraulic brakes, the forks, solid steel chassis, all the usual safety features that you would have on the equivalent of a 50cc. Apart from this is battery operated and it has full EAPCC approval. It's approved by the Met Police and Oxfordshire Police Force as well, and soon to be a whole load others as well. So it's it has a push bike classification. And the reason for that is the technology outside of the quality and the safety features is of such, we don't have a throttle on them. We have a walk button, which takes you from 0 to 6 kilometres an hour, I believe, or between 3 and 6 kilometres an hour. That then you start using the pedals after that, which are non-resistive pedaling. So really good if you've got injuries or you're looking to just circulate your blood without pressure. The pedals then start the battery going, a little bit like a hybrid, and then the battery kicks in and then powers the motor. So it's as close as to a bike you can get with motorcycle grade safety features and build quality.
So it's brilliant and kind of, you know, taps into all the legislation around being able to get in and around those bicycle lanes and all of that good stuff. So and what has been the take up so far? You mentioned that there's a lot of the Uber drivers or the Uber Eats and that kind of stuff. Are we talking a significant footprint? Can you put some numbers on it for us?
Yeah, so there are roughly about 10,000 on the road in the UK, which is really significant. We're growing year on year. We're looking to do about 3,000 to 4,000 in the next trading year out on the road, and then we're looking to, you know, increase that even more as well. But there are so many sort of verticals that we've just scratched the surface of at the moment, and we're just going to be pushing those very hard alongside with the innovation and the finance and insurance that's really built around the use of the bike instead of just the indebtedness to the customer.
Super. There's so much happening in the insurance world about safety and regulation, and it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't start to see some really strict stuff coming forward about LMT, as you called it, to make sure that people who are crossing roads with green light pedestrian sign being flashed at them are not being mown down by people who have got, it'd be remiss of me to not mention it, people that don't have to have a full driving license to utilise these vehicles. They are, in fact, so important to us that they go into this sector and help keep moving goods and food around. So anything we can do with technology to make that easier is all the better. Now, Paul Kerber, the other thing that Paul Jewell and I were speaking about was how you go from being somebody with the upbringing that they had through to someone with multiple businesses, serial entrepreneur. I called you, didn't I, Paul Jewell? I thought that was lovely to acknowledge that. And you told me an incredible story, and you can omit as many details as you like, but it relates to someone you met in a park when you were younger. I don't know how you feel about going into that, because I personally found it very inspiring.
Yes, I don't mind at all going into it whatsoever. Years and years ago, we were in inner city Birmingham. And as kids, we used to go to the park, you know, have a game of football. And we had, there was a homeless man years ago, which wasn't as common as it was today. And nor was mental health either. And he clearly had, you know, multiple breakdowns. And we used to sit there as kids, and we used to take food out of our parents' cupboards and go and give them to him. And he used to, ironically, you know, you look back, he used to read us some really lovely quotes out of the Bible in terms of, you know, doing good and, you know, and have a positive impact in life. Don't worry about your environment. You are your environment every day. You know, you can wake up and change anything. And he used to teach us how to play chess. And, you know, in winter, we used to pinch our dad's old sort of wax jackets and go and give them to him, you know, in the park and all this stuff. And it's a beautiful, very true story that I really hope that some of my old school friends, if they ever see this, they'll know exactly who I'm on about. And it was a lovely thing. And it's one of those things that stuck with you in life where I don't even know what ever happened to him recently, but it's just one of those lovely moments where you just think, wow, how incredible is that? And then later on in life, we found out that he was the UK's third best badminton player in the 70s, ran, I think, wow, three or four sports halls, ranked top five in the UK. His grandfather sat on the board with Winston Churchill doing the fruit and veg distribution during World War II. So, wow. Yeah, the same from years ago. He was from good stock, you know, probably was there. And to think that he'd had huge nervous breakdowns and ended up going from a real hierarchical family down to, you know, sleeping in a park, but had incredible education and thought and delivery to what you're invited. He was many years ahead in terms of plotting out where the world was going to be today. And that was a great experience for me. That's something I've always carried with me through life. So yes, no problem talking about it.
I'm very glad that you shared that. Thank you. Because you've got this leadership quality that I just really admire in people, which is you've had some knocks. You've been at the top, you've been back down again, back up again, back down again. And you're very kind to share that. And that's what makes you such a good egg, because you're just trying to do something awesome for the zero emission industry, but through growth and employment and making sure that our industry ticks along as it sounds. And I think that encounter with that person has a lot to say for that. And the religious stories that he told you. And Paul, you've got that in common together, both of you.
Okay, we're going to have to go with which Paul?
You can decide who goes first. But I was thinking of you, Paul Kirby, because you're big on self-improvement and understanding things about yourself and religion and motivating for business.
Yeah, I must admit, as I listened to that, Paul, it just is really encouraging. I've spent a fair chunk of time working in environments where you've got many homeless people with many challenges, and some of the most satisfying days on the job are with those conversations in mind, and you know, just getting that sense of feedback and the difference that you can make with all of that. You know, some incredible people, as you described, Paul, that are on the streets. And the stats are that we're only ever 6 weeks away from being homeless ourselves. You know, it could just happen overnight. And also mental health being what it is, and, you know, feeling that sense of being overwhelmed and just wanting to escape the world. But it sounds like it's given you a really good grounding. And I will be honest, it's helped me tremendously, just kind of, you know, thinking around those people that, you know, have got less than, you know, we've got a roof over our heads. We've got the clothes on our backs. You know, a lot of people don't have those basic things. So, Paul, you know, my journey has been one, you know, from childhood and some challenges and stuff like that, you know, you have to dig deep, right, to kind of overcome. Tell us a time when you've had to dig deep for yourself. You know, we know about your friend that's the badminton champion. What about you? And how have you overcome in those situations?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, there are, I think that there are certain people that are maybe cut out to be able to bring adrenaline from which would be usually activated via a huge shock event into the forefront of what they can do without the shock happening. And I don't think it's a superpower. I think it's potentially a curse at times. At the same time, and what I mean by that is that, you know, durability and being able to get up when you're down, and what people think down is, you know, there's always another roll, right? And, you know, the famous old saying, you know, if you're already on the ledge, you know, you've probably already stepped off, because no one knows where the end is until it's the end. And I think, you know, from my background, you know, from my upbringing and where I sort of ended up getting to, I guess I've been down a lot. You know, I nearly died in a road accident when I was 15. Couldn't play football for 2 years. A couple of my friends became, you know, professional footballers. You know, Lee Hughes was one of them, West Bromwich Albion. I was actually going to his house when I got run over. So it's a... it's a funny old thing. I think sometimes people are just made a little bit different, and that is not sometimes is not a vantage at all. And I think entrepreneurs, especially entrepreneurs, seem to just be a little bit crazy, right? And because you've kind of got to be to a degree, you know, you've got to be, and that's got to come from somewhere about something. But I think from coping mechanisms, from what is the getting up, I think if there was something that I could bottle or train on, I think there's something about people understanding that you're nowhere ever near the bottom, you know, and I don't quite know what that is, Paul. I don't have the answer to that. But if you can tap into an adrenaline source that usually happens when your body is giving you a kick up the backside to say this needs to change, and bring that to the forefront of your daily approach, your mornings, your afternoons. And I always find, for me personally, that the best times have been under pressure. You know, always the best times of when you do things when you're so tired you can't see a screen. You know, you're so tired you just can't type that email. And I think by doing those, there is magic in doing those. There is exhaustion and there is pain and there is, you know, and without a doubt, it takes a toll on you. There's no two ways about it. But I think there's something magic about that. There's never nothing more pure than being in a situation where it's loss or go. And I just think the more people can share and have the ability to talk about that with everybody about everything, I think the world would be in a far better place.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And again, thinking back, I went and did a challenge. It was an off-grid challenge for nearly four days. They basically took our phones away, took watches, anything. At 8 o'clock at night, we started and went off into the wilderness. This was up in Snowdonia. And I had a bad knee. So my knee was already bad when I got there. I'd had an injury from dad dancing at a wedding. terrible. how that happened, I have no idea. Anyway, so my knee is already sore and we start going and we've got 20 kilos on our back and everything that we need, 10, all that sort of stuff. And so we went and we camped for the first night and we camped really late at night, you know, putting a tent up in the dark. And then the next day we hit some of the peaks. Now, for anybody that's been out walking, and maybe you felt this, you go to the peak that you can see and you think, whoa, and then just as you get over, you see there's another one a little bit further
yes.
on.
Yes.
But we had some talks at these different peaks and we got to this peak and we'd absolutely bust a gut to get to this peak. And my knee is in bits. I mean, it's swollen. I'm taking ibuprofen. I'm literally doing one pace after another. And then we're all expecting that now we're going to go down, but we get the up signal and it's that peak over there. And you're like, and I honestly, just in me, I just felt ruined. But you've got your poles and you just took another step. And literally there were times where I was just taking three steps and stopping and yeah. taking three more steps and stopping. And then, you know, you got a bit of a wind and away you went. And we made it. And we were actually the second group. There was about seven groups. We were the second group to finish. And it wasn't a race, but we just so happened that we were. And what I learned from that, and I learned this, you know, because I had similar this weekend when I bumped my eye. My knee was better, but still ropey. But I knew now that if I just put one foot in front of another, I'll get to where I need to be. I'm learning from experience. So it sounds as though, and a long ramble, everybody, I'm really sorry for that, but that resilience piece comes from just putting one foot in front of another, writing that email, you know, kind of making that phone call, getting up again. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that the again, like I said, the more people that talk about this, the better on all levels. On all levels, there's no Superman in our world, and everybody has got to understand. You know, God, we are, you know, as a civilization, and it's just my point of view, we are untapped resources. As civilizations, we're incredible ants, right? But we'll all sit at home and on a TV, watch David Attenborough documentary about ants carrying leaves for 7 miles, and they all get together, and the bottom ones drown, so the top ones don't. And all of us sit there and go, "Wow, you know, isn't that amazing? You know, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen." And yet we take for granted the fact we've just, you know, landed a space rocket in the middle of the ocean. Yeah, but we've got these ants are just unreal. You know, hold on, guys. Right, we have a lot of power to do a lot of good here, right? You know, so I think, yeah, I'm totally with you. There's a vibe that I think a lot of people have, and there's a vibe that a lot of people should tap into of each other. I think we should all share experiences in all types of well-being. And you never know what works for one doesn't work for another, right? But the more we talk, the more people you're going to hear their story about. And yeah, I couldn't agree more. One step in front of another, you know, is the start of everything. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
I think there's a lot to be said for ego getting in the way of that level of sharing, because as you correctly identify there, we can learn a lot from the animal kingdom, from the hierarchies they deploy. And guess what? None of it's about ego. It's about ability and the need, the necessity for those, what you described it, ants at the bottom versus the ones carrying the leaves. They're built different, as we said at the top of the show. They're just built different, and that's okay. Whereas I think a few of us have been brought up with decades of being told you've got to do this, be that, strive for that, aim for that. And the inverse of that is true too. When someone raises a hand and says, I want to do this thing, we lack that incredibly supportive, nurturing culture to say, great, let's see how to get you there. So Paul, with you on the mountain and, you know, the wind blowing you left, right and center, and you, Paul, being so tired you can't send an email, I guarantee you both had somebody somewhere who was rooting for you, who was being your champion. And we're going to move on to a fun section of the show for you, Paul Jewell, in a minute. But I love the idea that if I had one wish for people, it would be leave your ego at the door and offer to help and support and nurture and guide. And as a result, we'll have a collective who is achieving more than we ever thought imaginable. And no dream is a stupid dream. And I think that's the thing. You can't all be CEO. You can't all be the cleaner. You all have to choose your zone and make it work. And that terrible Absolutely. Microphone racket was caused by Paul Kirby getting a very special thing out of a very special box.
I'm sorry, did I knock the microphone? Is that what happens?
We love you. You can do whatever you want.
Oh, dear. But do you know what? What I love, the one thing that we can all share all of the time is mindset. Because there's that great story. You mentioned the cleaner. There's the great story. I don't know if it's anecdotal or it's real or not, but the president walks into the toilets in NASA, and there's a guy in there, you know, cleaning the toilets. And he says, all right, so what do you do? And he said, I send people to the moon. Because, you know, the mindset is we all play a part. And there's a great image of, you know, when we lose a bit of our body, we're not quite complete, are we? Do you know what I mean? And you know, we're missing something. Every part of us has a valuable part to play in life, and mindset says no matter where we are and whatever we're doing, we can make a difference and we can add something. So
absolutely.
Sarah's alluded to something, because I was getting caught up in the conversation, albeit I think we've got a few minutes of this conversation. But anyway, we'll do it now and we'll see where the conversation goes afterwards. Because we have, it's a closing tradition, but this we might allow a little bit more chat afterwards, because I'm sure there's more to come. But we have a closing tradition, and that tradition is to present you, Paul Jewell, with the EV Cafe Magic Wand. Yay!
Thank you.
There we go.
So, thank you.
And look, it's got his little lightning
rabbit. Didn't get to keep it.
Oh, hang on.
Sorry.
No, that's a first. That is a first, to grab it before. See, there's an entrepreneur.
There's an entrepreneur.
I'll have it. So now I will pass it to you so you can take it graciously rather than grabbing it. Naughty.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much. That's great. Thank you. Thank you. I just on that note, just remember who sold it to me before I went and got the grab. So you built it up, right? You offered it me. I didn't take it.
Exactly. So, Paul, you now are empowered to conjure up a dream all of your own. Now, it can be to find out what your friend in the park is now doing, if he's still with us, and all that kind of stuff. It could be anything, right? You can, this is your wish. What would you use the magic wand to wish for today?
I think considering we've spoken a lot about mindset, you know, on this show, and I think a lot of that comes from having a chance in life. And if there was one thing I could wave a magic wand on, was for food to be net free. I think it's huge. I think supermarkets should only have a license if certain baseline foods are given as net free. Fruit, veg, pasta, all those sort of things should have no VAT, no profit, no anything attached to them, and to give everybody a chance of health to create wealth would be my magic wand.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
And I like this phrase net free. So so that there's no cost to anybody. So they're basically the cost to the farmer is covered, and you know, all of the any cost is covered, but everything else is just right. You can yeah, pay effectively. Yeah. Because occasionally
four
apples, don't we?
Should be 9p, you know? 4 apples should be 9 pence, right? Not £1.50 each. There's no...
Yes.
We don't give a chance. What chance have people got if they can't get protein, minerals and dignity, more importantly? What about the dignity buying fresh food, right? It's... So that would be my... That's my magic wand. I think it's criminal, the way that the food industry operates. Criminal.
Wow. this is a whole new podcast, Sass.
I told you he was good. This man is fascinating, honestly. I knew you'd get on. And you're right about the food waste stuff. I do love to follow. I think he's called the Food Detective and well worth a look on. He's covered so much ground. He's a fellow who's annoyed about the way that very named supermarkets are lying about what they're doing with their old food. He opens a bin, which is always locked, there's a clue there, and looks inside it like, how is this in the bin? It's a plant pot. This has absolutely no need for this to be in the bin. Or he videoed people throwing away cakes. Cakes, just cakes. There's nothing wrong with them. They'd be absolutely fine for days beyond that day. And they put them in the actual waste, not the recycling waste, on camera and then denied it. You know, standing up for what you believe in pays dividends in the end. And if anybody's had the opportunity to devote time to a food bank organization, whether you do that through your admin skills to help them reach more audiences, or whether you literally go and volunteer, it is the most wholesome experience, knowing that a little bit of elbow grease creates meals for plenty. And I'm totally with you there. We used to support a lot of charities, Paul, didn't we, with the EV Cafe? And we do want to resurrect that, but maybe we should put food charities onto our list again.
Yeah, I think it's super important that we all have that mindset that is looking beyond what we do. I think we've started the electric van man business, and that is core to what we're doing in terms of the reason for doing it was family. So in other words, give something that the family could have to sort of carry on, but also that we would have the opportunity to employ people. You talked about dignity earlier, and how much cooler is it to be able to say, hey, listen, why don't I give you a job? There's a great organization called Half the Story, Grace Enterprises, Half the Story, and they basically make biscuits, and they're not for profit, and they employ people that perhaps are a bit challenged in the sort of job market, and give them the dignity of you know, having a payroll. They're a bit more patient with them when they melt down at regular intervals, or they don't turn up, you know, at different times. This is the kind of the entrepreneurship that is great to see, isn't it? And there are lots of businesses. And I think we get confused that actually wealth is a bad thing. No, it's a great thing because it gives more opportunity. As another guy, Peter Vardy, who does with his dealerships in the automotive sector, every employee gets a check on day one to write to their charity of choice, £100. There you go. Just get on your induction is give this £100 to somebody that matters. Okay, great. You know, away it goes. It's a different mindset. And I think we need to carry this. And Paul, thank you for championing it. What does the future look like for you? What's next?
Next is automotive and mobility banking. That's our next phase. That's where we want to get to. There's we all bank. We all use a banking app. We all know that current accounts are loss leaders outside of debt for banks that they don't pay. So there's no money in providing apps for us to do transactions, right? They all lose banks' monies, but they make up for it in other places. There's something around that, you know, a vehicle was usually the second highest cost in your life. Mobility generally is the second highest cost in your life. As we've discovered, you know, earlier, it's personal. It covers a number of factors. And I think there's, so one of the items that we're going to be sort of working on through 2026 is giving people automotive banking. So that would be your vehicles, your mobility, your cost of transport, all in a single current account, which gives you your access to your stuff where your data is valued, and all of the transactions of the items that sit around those are directly rewarded for you. For you, your data, your spend, the money that you work hard with for, sorry, in terms of how that gets deployed across the industry. And I think by having a smart bank, as it were, on your phone that would sit outside of your traditional banking app that powered your mobility data, your needs and requirements. And we spoke earlier about how that gets funded, how that gets insured, how that gets personalized for you, your family, you could have, you know, kids at uni, grandparents living far away, going in for an MOT, going in for a service that they are super nervous, you know, and anxious around. And how we can almost control that narrative and make sure that finance is spent where it should be spent, in the right way. And the return value back to the user is absolutely critical. You know, if I'm going to spend, you know, a proportionate amount of my family money on three services a year for three cars, well, I want something back for it, right? So, because I want to know that I am, you know, I know for a fact that most probably don't care because they need to go on to the next one, because that's how the industry's stats, right, against me. But I want my pound of flesh back, you know, in terms of what I want to put up there. And I think the exciting bit about our next step is definitely automotive and mobility banking. As a service, I don't know if that's even a thing, but hey, why not? I'll put a buzz line on the bottom of it.
BAS.
Automotive Mobility Banking. BAS and, yeah, BAMAS. I think it is, yeah, mobility.
BAMAS?
Well. Let's call it, yeah, BAMA, BAMA, yeah, one of those anyway, yeah. We'll have that, yeah, we'll have. And so there's something really intriguing about taking such a high cost of a household spend around vehicles and mobility and putting it into a single space. You know, your mortgage is just easy. It's there. It's not easy, but you know, it comes every month and you pay it, right? There's no anxiety around it apart from paying it, but there's anxiety around having these massive lumps of metal all over the place, not knowing what's going on, unforeseen costs, not knowing how to manage them when they come up, and also the repercussions of poor decision making. So how do we take people that have made uneducated decisions in the past that have maybe been, I wouldn't say missold to, but they've gone in and got swept away with a YouTube channel, gone and purchased a car because of what someone said it was great doing, but in their real life there, they're now stuck with that for 3 years, right? 3 years is a long time in someone's life. It's a huge amount on. Anything's can change. So I think it's just about understanding, plotting that way through, and for people just to know that there are experts. I'm not an industry expert, but there are people out there that are smart enough to develop things to get people's back, right? And understand that we are the data play, right? We're the industry, not the industry. We're it. Yeah, where we put our coffers is where we're at, and that's really important. That's really important. And I think we forgot that. We forgot all of that. So I think that the tech is now there, the data is now there, and the enabling of that is absolutely a mission of mine to make sure that automotive and mobility banking is brought into a single space for people to control that anxiety and that credit risk.
Fantastic. I mean, that sounds super quality. It kind of feels like the cherry on top of the cake, actually, to be fair. Sass, this has been a really great conversation, hasn't it?
I'm so glad you feel that way. I certainly do. Paul, the jewel in the automotive crown, brings forward the moral compass to us when thinking about the end user, the driver, the customer, the one who pays all the commercial models, deserves a kickback. And if we can all learn something from this podcast, it's about being an inspirational leader, leaving greed and ego at the door and making sure that we are lifting everyone up to grow what should be a really wholesome, proactive, productive industry where everyone can benefit and live the life they deserve. Oh, and by the way, don't forget to volunteer for your food bank.
Oh, wow. Paul Jewell, you I can't help but say you have been the jewel in the crown. Is it, you know, Sass has
already got it.
I'm just stealing it. I am, because there's no better way of describing it. It's been a great conversation, Paul. Listen, thank you for the encouragement to think differently about our working world, where, you know, you're bringing ideas to market that serve the gig economy, so that these people are often, you know, the more challenged in society as well. But also thinking, you know, just to, not altruistically directly, but really thinking about how can we care for people in the right way. And I too started out my life selling used vehicles in the automotive. Well, I actually started cleaning them, but eventually got promoted to used car salesperson. Yes, everybody, I sold cars. I know I'm a van man, but I did start out selling cars. But it's been fabulous. Thank you for being such an inspiration to us, and that we wish you all the very best in that mission for the future. That is that's awesome. And anything that we can do to help, just let us know.
I will do. Thank you. Thank you both. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Nah, it's been great. And listen, everybody, that has been a wonderful conversation. Well, you know, we have lots and lots of conversations. They're all on our website. You head over to evcafe.org and just /podcast. You'll find them all there. You can also find them on Spotify and Apple and all of those good places. And we'll put all Paul's details into the chat, so you can link up with him on LinkedIn, follow him on anything else. We'll find him out. We'll stalk him properly so you can connect with him. And until next time, have a great day, everybody.